The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Ride with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade. Take the mic.
We are live with Rewind to Raw. I am John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting to chat about tonight's fallout from the Survivor Series, the hunt for Egg for 3 hours, an enormous payoff. Hello, Wei.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing great.
Is that a genuine answer?
You can interpret it however you would like.
It's hard to tell. Hard to always tell.
We'll see how I'm doing midway through this review.
All right.
Lot to talk about coming out of this. Are you doing well? Are you good?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, doing pretty good.
Well, folks, we have the Survivor Series that went down on Sunday night. We did a post show immediately afterward with all of our thoughts. Immediately after the show, did you have a dramatically different feeling today when you rewatched the Survivor Series before Raw?
No, but maybe when I watch it for a third time, I might have a change of opinion.
That you miss things, and then you pick them up on the third viewing of WWE pay-per-views. That's the magic viewing. Yes, it's like, oh, yeah. I get it now. That's why Austin Theory lost to get a title match the next night. It all makes sense now.
Yeah. 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 I mean, the clues were probably there the whole time that it would be Austin Theory. I mean, and I think we can look back and say, Steve Austin, this was clearly Steve Austin is on his way. That's why they chose a different Austin.
If they really wanted to milk ratings, that should have been the tease all night long.
Austin. Yeah. It should have been Austin Appreciation Night.
Austin stole the egg. He's on his way to the arena. He's coming for the third hour. He's going to wrestle.
Yes.
All right. Up on the site, beyond that, we have our schedule for the coming week. Some highlights this week. On Tuesday night, Wei and I will present our latest edition of Talk. Something that we do a lot of, but this is a different level. This is a different level of communication.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised that it's only our third time actually talking. This is, of course, the podcast that we do where we try not to talk about wrestling, or at least not current wrestling. But that doesn't mean we won't talk about the subject as it relates to maybe our business and just each other's lives. So it'll be a chance for us to sit down, I believe. Are we going to do this in person, John?
This is going to be historic. This is the first time that I've ever been invited to Wei Ting's home.
Oh my God, you're always invited. Are you kidding me?
I've never been invited. I've never been to this place. I technically need an address because I don't know where you live.
Okay, well, yes, John Pollock will be in this room recording this show.
Oh my goodness.
Live in person with me talking tomorrow. So that is an exclusive we give to our patrons, I guess, whenever we feel like it.
I'm going to play that keyboard when I get there.
Sure, we can jam. Yeah, let's do it.
Sounds great. Yeah. Exciting. So that's coming out tomorrow evening. A live in-person Talk, no less. Then the rest of the week.
Live for us, not for everybody else. It'll be for you all.
Everything's live. You can say live for anything, really. On Thursday, Bushby and Thompson's Wrestling Adventure. This should be a fun chat because they have enlisted not just Benno, but SP3 will be back.
Correction. Benno was tied up because of something, so he couldn't make it.
He was tied up with what? Succession? Over Final Battle 2005?
Could have been Succession.
Your priorities are completely out of whack here. Well, the three of them will be reviewing the year-end card for Ring of Honor in 2005. Quite the show. If you go look at this lineup, they will be reviewing that on Thursday. So look out for that on the British Wrestling Experience feed. And then Andrew will be back with WH on Saturday for Post Pro Res. They're going to be looking a lot at this New Japan Noah co-promoted event for January the 8th at the Yokohama Arena. And then Sunday, WrestleNomics Radio will be featured. Those are just some of the big highlights. And the main event of the whole week, MCU Later, with the debut of Hawkeye, is going to be dropping on Thursday with yourself and WH diving into a brand new series.
That is correct, yeah. The Marvel shows are back in the Disney Plus service. And, you know, not only that, but a lot has happened. A lot has been announced in the world of the MCU over the past month or so. And WH and I will be talking about our thoughts on the Spider-Man trailer. And, of course, the slew of Disney Plus shows that have been announced recently, as well as the first episode of Hawkeye, which comes out Wednesday. So we'll be chatting about that Thursday. So tune in on MCU Later in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
It's got a it's set in around Christmas time, I understand.
That's right. Yeah, in New York City.
They're really trying to pull me back in. I can see what the marketing is after here.
You know, I might open the invite two times this month for you to come over here to record.
Well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, but a lot of great stuff coming up at postwrestling.com this week and the continuation of our post daily news updates. We did not put one out today with the Survivor Series so fresh on Sunday night, but we will be back on Tuesday and maybe we will chat the status, how the post daily news updates are going on Talk. We'll save that for Talk.
But it'll be an assessment of, like, John and I haven't really even discussed it ourselves. So, like,
it's going to start with the question, Way, do you want to kill me? And Way pondering this potential, the value of my disappearance permanently.
But we will certainly assess maybe this month-long experiment and how it's been going for us and maybe what it holds in the future.
So we're going to reserve most of our discussion about the news items for Tuesday. We will be talking about the SmackDown and Rampage numbers that you can read up on the site. Kenny Omega vacating the Mega Championship for AAA. And maybe by the time we talk tomorrow, AAA will have announced their new championship match for Triple Mania. It has not been announced as of yet, but the title is vacant after more than 2 years of Omega's championship reign.
Has it been 2 years? Wow.
He won it like 3 weeks after the debut of Dynamite from Rey Fenix.
Wow. 2 years. Okay. Well,
could you imagine if they got to 2 years with Roman Reigns and then he's got to miss a few months and they vacated it?
I mean, injuries happen, you know, like what can you do in a situation like this?
Not vacate it. Wait.
How long, though?
Look how long they've been waiting with Omega. Like, how many title defenses? How many times has it gone down to Mexico in these 2 years? It's not like they've had the biggest problem having this title on Omega all this time.
But do we know how long he'll be away?
Well, the timeline's out there. It's like they're supposed to be like minor surgeries. It's not the idea like he's going to be gone 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they do have a main event that they want to promote, and I think that Kenny match is still there.
Well, they did the promo. They're obviously going to get back to Omega and Vikingo at a date to be determined. That seems to be what all sides are working towards. So anyway, we'll talk more about all of that news stuff. But off the top here, before we get into Raw, this is connected to Raw, but I would guess the most noteworthy aspect of this show was not the discovery of who stole the egg, but a spectator at the Barclays Center making their way onto the ramp and tackling Seth Rollins as he was leaving the ring after his beatdown of Finn Balor. And I was not watching Raw live at the time, so I had someone actually send me the video before I had seen it on screen. And just watching it, you know, you would have imagined, like, the way this was shot, this guy came out with like a house of fire towards him that you almost just thought it would have been an angle before you quickly realized it was a fan that had attacked Rollins. And since that time, WWE did put out a statement to ESPN stating, WWE takes the safety of its performers very seriously. The individual who attacked Seth Rollins has been turned over to the NYPD and will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And Mark Raimondi of ESPN going on to state that a 24-year-old male has been taken into custody in Brooklyn following an attack on Seth Rollins during the Raw TV show in Brooklyn, according to an NYPD spokesperson. So, yeah, Rollins, like, he came up, they just went to replays immediately, and then it comes back, Rollins is on the ramp, and he's back in character, his mouth is bloodied up, And then he came back at the end of the show for the angle at the end. So it seemed like he was fine. But nonetheless, this is the same arena where we had the Hall of Fame incident with Bret Hart a couple of years ago.
Right. Interesting. I don't know if you can really draw, you know, correlation between.
No,
between
it's
the
a coincidence
two.
It's, that it was in the same arena. But nonetheless, folks, don't be doing this stuff.
Of course not. And I feel weird even like drawing attention to it on a podcast like this, because the last thing I think any of us want to do is glorify the behavior of pieces of shit like this guy. Obviously, like, the only reason you would do something like this is for the attention, is to click around, scrolling around Twitter afterwards saying, I did that. Look at me. And fuck that guy. And it's like, I hate this type of behavior. I hate the fact that we're even talking about it, but it is news. But I will say, you know, all the credit in the world to Seth Rollins for coming back out here at the end of the show and fulfilling his role, when he had every right to not come back, because they've gotten very lucky, I have to say, with any of these incidences, because it can always be a lot worse, you know, if these fans are carrying a weapon, if Seth landed poorly, this dude was not a small man.
He took him down. It's like, man, you could have landed on your... You just don't know how someone's going to land. To your point about the weapon, like, that's the fact this guy was able to get up to him and not only make contact, but significant contact. It's, it's very alarming if you're a wrestler who, like, you're in performance mode. You're not in self-defense mode. And all it takes is a split second of you having to shift into self-defense mode, and it could be too late. If somebody was able to get to you and they have a knife or something on them, it's certainly concerning.
So you know, the continued question is, like, what can be done about situations like these? You know, do you ramp up security? Do you just, you know, have more security guards watching the barricades at every turn? Do you put up the glass like we had in the pandemic? I certainly hope not. You know, I would hate for a couple of these assholes a year to ruin it for the rest of the world. But you know, like, we're one terrible incident away from, like, you know, some serious change needing to occur. It's just, I hate the fact that we're even talking about it. But fuck that guy.
Way has summarized it. Well, on that note, the rest of Raw was from the Barclays Center, their second night in the building in Brooklyn, New York. And tonight, Raw and SmackDown were invited to the show as they searched for this egg. Way, I have no idea why SmackDown was involved in this show. They literally used Sami Zayn, and they took Natalya and said, you're going to be in Tamina's corner. Why? No reason. You're just going to be in her corner. And the rest of you, well, if you want to run around backstage, we're going to do some pre-tapes looking for the egg. There was absolutely no reason for SmackDown on this show. Zero.
Well, I would certainly hope that this meant that the majority of the SmackDown roster who did not have a role in the show got the night off.
I hope so. I hope there were not people just sitting around all day to do nothing, because there was no need for anyone could have fulfilled the Sami Zayn role. And God knows, Natalya, there was absolutely no purpose for her being there. None.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is just a tactic to, like, try to get more people to buy tickets to what should, I guess, is technically a co-branded show. But, you know, the script obviously had other plans, and those plans only involved one member, realistically, of the SmackDown roster.
So we started with a shot of the empty egg container as Vince is... This has to be, like, the silliest. I mean, if you look at the show description for our podcast, that's exactly why I wrote it as such. Vince is just sitting there with Pierce and Deville, and they recap the night before that this was a gift that The Rock gave him. And then he gets in the line, well, he probably owed it to me, but he did still give it. And he's upset that someone stole from him. That is the offense. Pierce and Deville have interviewed everyone, and Vince threatens to fire the two if the egg doesn't show up by the end of the night. Deville says they have surveillance footage, ruling it could be a man or a woman, and whoever brings the culprit will get a WWE Championship match against Big E tonight. This is the equivalent of winning the Royal Rumble, is finding this egg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously more valuable than being the sole survivor on the Survivor Series team, more valuable really than any actual match at the Survivor Series, is the ability to find this egg.
Did you notice that tonight, though, it felt like the commitments for Red Notice were all contained to Sunday, because this was just about the egg. There was no like Red Notice plastering all over the episode. Yeah. It was just them taking this and continuing it for a night for their own purposes.
Yeah, I felt like, I mean, it was almost a way, like the more important aspect of it was the fact that it was Vince McMahon on TV to carry on this mystery whodunit storyline. And less of, because I don't recall hearing Red Notice mentioned on commentary, unless I'm mistaken.
I didn't notice anything. Least within the body of the show, and we're not getting the U.S. feed.
Obviously. I would imagine maybe they had to have some sort of deal, even to use the prop, don't you think?
It could have been.
Or permission.
Yeah.
Some sort. But, so are you suggesting, like, are we trying to make some sort of inference about whether or not they actually made money from Red Notice for tonight or not?
I would imagine it was just an overall, just a product integration that they had an agreement for. And I mean, if they wanted to take it, and I'm sure when it comes to these, it's not necessary. It's probably like the WWE side of how do we integrate it into the product, and thus it was a Survivor Series promotion, and they just decided to make it an angle to send people to Monday night.
I think maybe the appeal of it is less about, it's again, mainly Vince, and also having a storyline that carries into a show-long angle to drive interest up on Raw. And, you know, realistically, Survivor Series probably was too quick, didn't offer enough time to solve this stupid story anyway. So maybe it was just their thinking.
So... then Kevin Patrick is with Randy Orton, and Riddle has gone missing. And he says it's unlike him to miss a match. But then Riddle walks up dressed as Randy Orton with a goatee and a mustache that he has like taped onto his face, wearing a vest like Randy and doing an impression of Randy. And Orton gets upset, saying, "I told you to be like me. Don't be me." And then Riddle leaves to walk out to Randy's theme song for his match with Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, with the trunks. Yeah. No, it was amusing, you know? He's amusing. It's not really for me, but, like, I'm not everybody. And a lot of people seem to like him. A lot of people seem to like RK-Bro. I would say it's a very successful act in this show.
Well, the goatee got torn off by Dolph, and Graves was the only person that reacted when this was... when this was removed. Riddle went for a pescado right into a super kick, and the Dirty Dogs do Randy's pose in front of him as they go to break. We come back. Riddle tries for a draping DDT. That's stopped, and he's hit with the Famouser. And then Riddle stops a super kick. High knee. He calls for the RKO, hits the RKO, and he pins Ziggler. And Randy was so elated to see his protege utilize his finisher. And Orton gives Riddle the mustache back. And then Orton fist bumps Riddle and hits Rude with the bro Derek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the crowd seemed amused by this.
Yeah, they seemed to enjoy it. And for now, RK-Bro is again on the same page. Is that what we're left with?
Yeah, they're the same person now.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder if this continues. I wonder if he, you know, I wonder if next week we see Orton dressing up as Riddle.
I doubt it. If he can't even ride a camel to the ring, I don't know if he'll be allowed to act like an idiot.
Hmm.
The talent is just tearing up the backstage area, searching for the egg. Poor Rhea Ripley was in the middle of this. This was like everyone got to be a 24/7 geek for the night.
So was she going to challenge Big E as well if she found it?
Yep. She was going to get a WWE title shot against Big E.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah.
R-Truth found a football, and then he ran into a woman's locker room. The comedy was endless tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Becky Lynch comes out. She said she has had some of her biggest moments here at the Barclays Center. Her career skyrocketed 3 years ago after slapping Charlotte Flair. And last night was a culmination of a decade of love, hate, friendship, and betrayal. I came out and I wanted to injure and maim Charlotte Flair. And you people loved every second of it. You didn't care who walked out the winner. And she said, "That's done. we're over that, and now I'm a heel. And she runs through all the different women on Raw, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan, and says, I used to put a lot of stock in your opinions, but all of you fans are full of crap. Last night, during the Women's Survivor Series match, you did the wave. You sang during that match. That was a tremendous 23-minute match to put it 3 hours deep into the show before the main event. How dare you do the wave? And this was her justification for saying, go to hell to all these fans. She says, but I actually agree with all of you because none of those 10 women deserve it. Liv's won one match in 4 years. And when I beat her, all of you will bitch and moan when she loses. I've got a death grip on this title and no one is taking it away from me. I found this both like Becky is a phenomenal promo. I think she is just a great, great speaker. But my God, after like last night, this audience just so wants to be behind this character. And there's no other babyface. And I'd include Bianca there. Bianca is a very effective babyface. She is nowhere near the level of Becky Lynch. But that's the role that Becky is in. And that's the one they're obviously sticking to. So that was what we reestablished here after this kind of needless Survivor Series. But nonetheless, it was one of the high points of the show was Becky and Charlotte.
It kind of reminds me of Daniel Bryan's role from years back when he had to face Brock, you know, mid, I guess he just won the title and then went on to have that match against Brock at Survivor Series and then had to, you know, work in that match. He was very much a babyface. And then the night after, he had to turn back into a heel. So, you know, I will say, I think, you know, anytime a performer is given the very difficult task of flipping back and forth within a week, you need to be a very talented promo. And Becky Lynch certainly, I think, you know, is probably one of the more capable people on that roster to pull off something like this. You could definitely argue how successful it is. Yes, they're absolutely still pushing against what the crowd wants. And I will say, like, you know, the entire thing with Charlotte, I think has probably been some of the more talked about stuff for Becky since her comeback, and therefore whatever value that they built with her as a heel, I think has pretty much been lost, and she's really just starting from square one again by trying to turn this crowd back on her and working against it. So it was already a struggle to begin with, and it continues to be a struggle.
Then, like in the very next segment, Bianca Belair comes out and she goes over her win the night before and she says, I was able to win because of all of you fans supporting and cheering me on. Dude, I couldn't believe these two promos were back to back.
Yeah, unreal. Like, it's not usual that they would have back to back promos.
It was so weird. That never happens. And there was no even crossover of the two, like, crossing paths.
No commercial break, even.
No commercial break. There was nothing. It was just like we went from one interview segment to the next in the ring, and they totally contradicted each other. And I thought Belair came off like, so
stupid.
Yeah, because the fans know that, yeah, they did do the wave. They were not into the match. Becky was not lying. That was the source of the heat in the promo. Mm-hmm. And then Belair comes out and it's like totally delusional.
Yeah. There was some really poor communication between whoever booked these two segments aside. You know, who knows? Maybe on a prior draft of the script, this was, you know, in the third hour and somehow things got swapped and this ended up being the case. But it was very unfortunate, even if it was in the third hour. You have Becky come out and basically remind the audience that, hey, we all turned on that match last night. And to have Bianca just come out and basically ignore it and, in fact, thank the audience in a way for, like, you know, they were
I've never seen 13,000 people wave at me at the same time. And you made me feel so important in this moment. Thank you.
Well, I will say, I mean, from her perspective, like, they were cheering for her, okay? They were cheering for Sasha. That is the truth. But still, like, for her to come out and not address what Becky just introduced, I think feels very, very disingenuous, you know, for a celebration.
Yeah, it was just, and to be just back-to-back with one another, it was just so bizarre. Like, this does not happen that often. But she says, Doudrop should do something better, like find the egg, and I've got something to show Tamina. I would imagine it's probably similar to what she showed her last week when she beat her in 3 minutes.
Oh, is that the match? I forgot.
We're getting a rematch this week. So Tamina comes out with Natalya As Corey Graves explains, all superstars from both brands are here. Therefore, Natalya's in Tamina's corner.
So
all I could think about Natalya was like, man, I could have been home an extra day this week before I got to come back for SmackDown on Friday. And here I am to walk out with my ex-partner and stand in a corner.
Maybe she was in the back anyway, you know, just hanging out with TJ or something like that. I don't know. But I didn't even know that these two were still a team. I mean, they were split up on different shows. So, like, you would assume that the association
I guess we've learned when a team gets drafted, it doesn't mean the team's done. Just like, you know.
No, usually it means the team is done. Like, most often times, that's what they do to split up teams, is just to draft them on the other sides. But somehow, inexplicably, they decided Tamina and Natalya was an important enough association to remind us that it still exists on this co-branded show.
Well, there's an EST chant. She gets yanked off the turnbuckle. Tamina hits her with the super kick and Samoan drop, but Belair kicks out. She's working on her neck, and then Tamina runs shoulder first into the post. Just the move of doom in WWE, and that was it. KOD, 3 minutes, 58 seconds. And then Natalya jumps Belair from behind, goes for the sharpshooter, gets kicked to the floor. Belair asks, what are you doing? And I don't think Natalya would have had an answer. What am I doing here? I don't know. And with that, Doudrop jumps Belair from behind and beats her. And Tamina, Doudrop, and Natalya all leave together. I don't know what this is supposed to... Maybe Natalya can just be moved to Raw, and that's it.
Yeah, why not? Or show up on both shows. Show up in NXT. Like, I don't think it matters much.
Or Doudrop can just say, you know, Tamina, all my friends used to call me Natty. You could just call me Natalya.
Doudrop can say that?
Yeah, just why not? Just create the Natalya character with a character.
Oh, you want her to adopt the Natalya
persona?
Yeah,
she just takes her name. Yeah, yeah. Sure. And then you have Tamina and Natalya every week. Playing the role of Natalya is Doudrop.
Then Brett will show up and, like, you know, like...
Vince is going to have this great idea. He's like, what? I've released all these people, but I could just have... Like, playing the role of the Fiend is now going to be...
Alexa Bliss. I mean, they actually did that.
They kind of did, so... Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if he could get Natalya, though. I mean, does he own the rights to the name Natalya?
We're giving too much thought to this. The three of them left together. I don't know why Natalya was on the show. Your answer is as good as any, that she was just there and said, hey, you want to be on the show? Sure.
Yeah. But this is all just, you know, setting up, I guess, minor villains for Bianca to overcome. You know, they
at least two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Tamina, she's already vanquished. She'll probably vanquish three more times. En route to this match with Doudrop, which I'm thinking Bianca will win. But ultimately, like, I don't know how much of it, like, they're all just kind of time fillers for Bianca until, like, she gets that rematch with, you know, Becky.
You know what this has to be? They have to do it on the New Year's Day show so that Belair can say, when the ball drops, Doudrops.
Ooh. I like it.
Let's wait 6 weeks just for that 5 second line.
Will you give the show a thumbs up? No matter what, if they did that.
100%. 100%. Okay. I can't wait for the first day of 2022. We'll be watching a pay-per-view. Seth Rollins comes out. He is the sole survivor. He led Team Raw to victory, carried them on his shoulders, and he goes through all the other members. Owens is a coward. Lashley got counted out. Theory tried hard, but wasn't good enough, and Balor took a brogue kick and was pinned.
Can we talk about how much this crowd loves, all of a sudden, this Seth Rollins theme song?
Yeah, all night they were humming this theme. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
I couldn't pick this theme song if you played me, like, five current WWE themes. I could not tell you what Seth Rollins theme sounded like. And maybe I'm missing out, because, like, evidently everybody in this arena was singing the song like it was Judas. Damn, like, did you recognize that this song was this popular?
No.
Yeah,
I didn't. My theme is still the Burn It Down theme, but I know he has moved on and moved on quite a long time. Like, WWE themes don't really resonate outside of, like, a very select few, I would say. Like, if you were to play a game with me and you played the first 10 seconds of a theme, I would struggle.
Well, like, the Nakamura theme, absolutely, yes. Okay, like, I mean, Glorious, yeah, like... but like the Seth Rollins theme song, really? Like this is the one this crowd recognizes? Wow. Amazing.
Right up there with Doudrop's theme.
Which is
I don't know. Maybe they'll start singing that one too.
Maybe.
So he just runs down all of Team Raw. No lies stated. I mean, they were all beaten, and he won by himself. And he says that he is going to show Balor what it takes to be the best, and their match is up next. So Balor cuts him off, comes out. This is the same arena as well, while we're doing historical trivia of Barclays Center, where these two had their match at SummerSlam that we reviewed not too long ago, and that was where Balor won the Universal title and then had to vacate it the next night.
I feel like mentioning even that little tidbit would have added so much more interest into like the reason why this match was even happening.
Graves did pull out the fact that Balor was the first Universal Champion and beat Seth Rollins, but did not connect the location that they were in.
Like a little video package to show that this was the arena where this had occurred would just add so much more built-in interest and reason for this match actually occurring here.
Honestly, if Seth did the powerbomb into the barricade and just left Balor laying,
ooh, that would have been great.
People would have like awesome. Bought it like to at least a small degree. I mean, you would have had people that would, it would at least connect with people a bit more because of the history of that spot in this arena, and you're leaving Balor laying just to tease something. But no, he comes out, they start.
But Balor wasn't the focus, I suppose. That was the point, right? Like they almost didn't seem to want to draw any attention to Balor at the end of this. Like, I don't think we're supposed to care.
Well, Rollins just jumps him as he enters the ring. Balor did come back with a Tope Kanhiro, but then catches Balor, drops him on the barricade, and continues to brawl on the floor, nails Balor with the steps and two stomps inside of the ring. So he's just left laying here. And this is when Seth is leaving, and the guy runs out and tackles him. And we got that whole thing here.
Yeah. So, you know, they're continuing to put a lot behind Seth en route to this Big E title challenge. Sucks for Finn Balor fans. But I think, you know, if you're a Finn Balor fan, you knew how much they value this guy after you saw the Demon match. He's lost a lot since then, you know, like lost in Saudi Arabia. I mean, got taken out last night, lost this. So, you know, it just seems to be his place.
And probably will lose to Rollins en route to this title match. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. He'll lose again. I mean, if he's even back, this felt like it was like a write off almost.
It was two stomps. I mean, it could have been more to it than that. On that note, Way, as we take a minor intermission here, this might have been the best tweet of the entire year. Did you see this from Weird Al?
No.
To everybody that's congratulating me right now on my new Kid Rock parody video, let me clarify. That's not me. That's actually Kid Rock. Dude, this thing has 100,000 likes. Have you seen this Kid Rock song, Don't Tell Me How to Live?
I might have scrubbed through it on my Twitter timeline. That's it.
Dude, but no exaggeration on my part. This might be the worst song I have ever heard in my life. It is so terrible.
Really?
It's awful. It's exactly like there's a reason that Weird Al tweet has resonated so quickly, so fastly, and great so tweet. Expansively to everyone because it nails it on the head. This is an absolutely horrible song that somebody had the bravery to unleash on the world.
Is the music bad, or is it the messaging, or is it the video? What exactly is so revolting?
It is all wrapped into one of just everything you would imagine of like, give me like the worst Kid Rock song you could possibly put
together. Is it rapping Kid Rock, or is it country Kid Rock?
It's more rapping Kid Rock.
Okay. Maybe with a bit of singing in there as well, or just rap. We don't need this.
We're not going to play it, but if you want to get just a taste of this, from hard luck tricks to trust fund freaks, bathroom stalls to penthouse suites, I've been around.
All right.
It's an awful song.
You're making.
I just wanted to take time out of this show to just express my horrific reaction to this song when I heard it. Okay, I just couldn't believe it was even released. It's that bad.
I mean, I'm sure he has his fans. I'm sure he has many of his fans that probably love it.
I read the wrong song. That's another Kid Rock song. Don't tell me you love me. God. So I don't even have the right song here in front of me. Okay, I don't even know what the song's called. It's segment. Like, don't tell me something. Don't tell me how to live.
Okay, there's a reason why we review pro wrestling and not albums on this podcast.
Don't tell me how to live. That's the song. Mm. Calling out snowflakes.
Ah, okay, okay. All right.
All right, let's move back to this. You can edit all of this out. The geeks are all running for the egg. Vince is with Sami Zayn discussing the title shot. If someone finds the egg, Zayn is 95% sure he knows who stole the egg. So the plot thickens. Street Profits come out, and they have a gym bag with something inside. Kevin Owens is in the back. He's got his camera phone on. He's got the light on his camera phone as he is going looking for this egg. And Schreiber asks him about abandoning
his team. I'm just trying to like envision the perspective of somebody who didn't watch this show and is only listening to your recap. How ridiculous this shit sounds.
Kevin Owens is wandering around with his cell phone with the flashlight on, looking for an egg that would grant him a title match.
Oh, man. Now I know why like people still listen to the show, but don't watch the wrestling. It's entertaining even for me listening.
Yes. So from there, did he have a point to this promo? He would have great interest in whoever plans to find this egg.
It's just there to remind us he's still in the title picture. He's on the title hunt and the egg hunt.
The Street Profits against AJ Styles and Omos. So Dawkins gets knocked to the floor. Omos is tagged in, and Montez Ford suddenly finds himself in the ring with Omos. He tries to fight the man with chops and enziguri. They don't affect Omos. He drops Ford with a clothesline. Dawkins gets thrown back out of the ring by Omos, so Dawkins goes to the bag. He takes out a fire extinguisher and shoots Omos with the fire extinguisher. This did cause a disqualification. So it's interesting. Because we have had this discussion at different times about contact made, what necessitates a DQ. He did not touch Omos with a physical item, but we have learned that the contents of a fire extinguisher necessitate the same impact as would a chair to the back.
Well, if you threw a chair at an opponent, I think you'd still get DQ'd. I don't think it's so much about not physically, like he... You don't have to be, it's not like electricity, you know, you don't have to conduct the offense from one person to another. Like, you just have to cause it. Like fire paper, for instance, fireballs. We've seen fireballs in pro wrestling. Yeah, that's, you're not really making contact. Projectiles, I think, are a cause for disqualification, we've learned. This made the Street Profits look terrible, okay? First of all, they built this whole thing up about, like, what's in the bag? It's a fucking fire extinguisher. And why, what good reason did they have of using a fire extinguisher against Omos when, it could have just been a chair. They got themselves DQ'd, you know, like, are Omos and AJ the champions? Remind me.
No.
Oh, who's the champion right now?
It's Orton and Riddle.
Okay, whatever. So I guess it doesn't matter, but... Still, it's like they came out here with the intent of getting disqualified.
If you lose, that moves you up.
Sure. Yeah.
It's called the Austin theory.
Ah, okay. Of course.
Of matchmaking.
So they came out here with this big trick up their sleeve, a fire extinguisher in a bag. and with the intent of using it, like what, after wrestling for 10 minutes just to exhaust themselves so that they can ultimately get DQ'd. Like, that part is stupid, you know, and it just ultimately, again, not to mention the fact that they are baby faces here who Omos did nothing wrong. His only offense is being big, which is not a crime, which is not illegal, certainly. And you had the baby faces get out of this terrible, clean matchup.
He's too good for them.
With a fire extinguisher.
Can't beat him clean.
Yeah.
You know what they were worried about? They were worried that some other team got the smoke.
Oh, that's why. Okay. That makes a whole lot of sense now. You're right. Yeah, I think this feud has been terrible. The Street Profits have done nothing for me in a long, long time now. And they'll probably get a title shot after this.
It is the working logic. Sarah interviewed Zelina and Carmella. They've also got a title match tonight. Why? I don't know. They were eliminated.
Because they're
night.
The only tag team in the division. That's the reason.
It's got its benefits. When you're the only challengers in the whole division, you get some perks. Veer Mahan is still on his way to Raw. Maybe this has been the same promo every week, but I noticed at this one that he is coming to Raw, and all of his highlights are on Raw.
He's coming back.
Like, it's got the logo there and the set. Like, man has only been on Raw, and he's now coming to Raw.
Well, he's coming with a last name now. You know, like, he did the work. He applied for legal documentation. He's coming to Raw with a last name.
Will he keep his last name? That'll be the question. Rhea Ripley and Nikki A.S.H. against Zelina and Carmella. So the idea here is that Nikki is the weak link, according to your challengers. Carmella put on her red mask, and then Rhea chased after Zelina, and Carmella was going to cover Nikki, but Rhea still made the save. Carmella sent Rhea into the post, so Nikki is left alone with the two of them. Carmella kicks her from the apron, code red, and Zelina pins her in 4:49, ending the illustrious reign of Rhea Ripley and Nikki A.S.H.
Not quite 2 years.
No,
but it was
there. Not. No, they didn't have to vacate after a lengthy reign, and now it is the reign of Zelina and Carmella, which should set up some rematches.
You would think so.
Or Doudrop and Tamina could team.
Oh, okay, perhaps. I'm thinking they just hold these belts forever because I don't think that we're getting another tag team in this division at all again. This is a division that they've cared even less for than the 24/7 division. The 24/7 gets way more creative time and effort put into it than these tag titles, which are completely dead. You know, I was happy for these two, the fact that these are two New Yorkers who got a championship win in their hometown, so congratulations.
They're not baby faces. We shouldn't be happy that they won.
Well, personally, on a, you know, behind the scenes perspective, that to me was the only value coming out of this. But besides that, it's like it was a title that, you know, at this point meant nothing for Nikki and Rhea. Like, after they won it after that night, it meant nothing for them. It's in fact taken Rhea down a big notch. I would say maybe the only benefit has been it's hidden her away from title contention, I suppose, so it's kind of kept her fresh. But, you know, this women's division on Raw now needs contenders, and Rhea Ripley outside of Bianca Belair is probably the biggest name that they have. Rhea versus Becky is actually one of the few options that is actually attractive for an opponent for Becky Lynch. So give those things to somebody else.
What would you call the team name of Tamina and Doudrop?
Tell me.
Samoan Drop.
Oh, okay. I love it. Great. You're great.
Dude, these reviews, they're about entertaining myself. Okay, that's how I'm going to last. DeVille tells Vince that they know where the egg is. So we go to commercial. Everyone's calling up their friends. Yo, they found him. They know where the egg is. Turn on Raw. It's going to be a big moment. We come back. Sami Zayn is in the room with Pierce and DeVille. Austin Theory walks in with the egg. Vince says, why did you do it? He says, I just wanted to take a selfie with it yesterday. But there was security, and I got scared, and I went back to the hotel. See? And he showed a selfie he took with the egg. Vince is going to drop the charges. Austin reminds him of himself. And Austin, you will get the title shot tonight. This upsets Sammy, who was under the impression that I was going to find the person that stole it and I would get the shot. Vince tells him to shut up, and he calls Sammy a snitch.
Nobody likes a snitch.
This was the climax of this whole story.
Oh,
there
yeah.
There were no suspects.
No.
There was nothing.
The climax of this story is when Nick Khan looks into the WWE's bank account and sees the zeros at the end coming off of this red notice thing. That's the only reason why any of this shit exists, okay? It's like, it's so they can make money off of this deal that this movie is paying them a stupid amount for whatever reason. And so that they can create another ad on top of a show that they're already getting paid millions for. So the real suckers are the people that are still watching and giving them this, you know, promotional power. But in terms of creativity, are you kidding me? Like, it's just a means to an end.
Mysteries are like the easiest thing. They are not the easiest to necessarily plot out, but they typically will hold people. Like, people love a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not asking for making a murderer here to be written overnight here for WWE, but
please finish your point.
All I wanted was just give me a show that's got like some mystery throughout and then a payoff at the end. Instead, we got people rummaging through popcorn and using the flashlight on their phones, and then the dude just walks in with it. Like, this down, this logic here. It was, I will give them this, okay? I will give them this.
They actually gave us a payoff, because they've dangled mysteries in the past with zero payoff. So this is already better.
What
than
I'm going to say is the faintest of praise that I will throw towards this angle is that on Sunday, when Roman Reigns walked into that room, the security guy took off.
Okay.
So there was a free path.
Oh, okay. All right.
Steal the egg.
Great. Yeah. Okay. So
That's what I've got. After literally 7 hours of WWE programming, that is my highest praise I've got.
You're so clever. Are you kidding me? Wow. Should we like make an Easter egg video about this? Man, I didn't even catch it on my second viewing of it. I'm going to have to go back.
Dude, this was The Wire.
Yeah. Can we go back, though, to Survivor Series and how blatantly they tried to dangle The Rock in front of this audience? Okay? Like, I think, you know he wasn't going to show up. All right? But the average person watching that show, you cannot convince me that
I would not hold it against anyone in that building that was hoping that The Rock was going to show up. I don't think many people were aware that he's in Australia. It's just impossible. But I will say this. It makes, and I understand, for Red Notice, there was a certain level of promotion that comes with that you want to integrate The Rock. And you there is no way that Netflix was sitting down and saying, you know what would really put this whole partnership over the top? Your top guy doing a Rock Bottom in the main event match that would elicit a chant of Rocky. I think that would be the cherry on top for this agreement.
Well, why did he bring Roman Reigns into the room? Why Roman Reigns and why the mention? I mean, okay, because it's The Rock's movie. I understand. But the whole thing was, to me, blatantly done to try to get the audience to think that this guy was going to show up, if not on Sunday, then on the Monday. And we'll see in the ratings whether or not it worked. But, I mean, you know,
I do think tonight's Raw will actually do somewhat. Like, this egg thing and coming off the Survivor Series, I'm actually expecting that they... And Vince being on TV. Like, Vince being on TV is the biggest thing.
Which is a real shame. Because it means
we're
morons. Okay?
Wait till Easter.
Yeah.
We'll have a whole Easter egg hunt.
It means like we are that stupid. Like they can go really like the least amount of effort in put in creating these terrible angles, and as long as it's a big name like Vince McMahon attached to it, as long as it's the thing that scrapes by with the bare minimum of a definition of a whodunit, they can see a spike. So I hope these ratings are terrible tomorrow, just to send them a message. But I mean, whatever. It won't change anything.
Sean Ross Sapp had a great tweet after last night, and that was that Impact got more out of The Rock for Bound for Glory last year with Ken Shamrock going into the Hall of Fame than WWE got for the 25th anniversary of The Rock. You are not telling me that I don't care what quarantine measures are in place, how far away he is, that he couldn't have at least sent a video.
So this was the other thing, too, because he's been on his Instagram, posting photos, apparently, like, from his from LA, like he's posting like, you know, him eating from like an LA sandwich shop or something. And you know, celebrities can probably like, you know, pre-record this stuff and tweet it out on a schedule at all times. But you had a lot of the audience thinking that he was actually still around and not actually in Australia. But and yeah, but it's ridiculous. If you could take the time to record something for his Instagram, you're telling me you can't do it for a show that's essentially dedicated to you?
Yeah, it just seemed like it was this whole show is structured around The Rock. We don't have The Rock. So, you know, you have to work around that. Okay, logistically, he can't be here. We need something. We need to do something to not have an audience that is naturally, and they're being pushed in that direction as well. Like what? By putting Roman on last, just everything they did, it was tailor-made for that audience in that arena to expect it. Like, I don't blame them.
Which is why I think they were more than happy to operate on the assumption from the audience that he would eventually show up.
That's such a weird line of thinking. It's like they're going to be so excited and want to see The Rock, and we can't deliver it. Like, why would you do that?
To get the rating.
But for last night, like, what benefit is it to structure so much around? Like, even The Rock bottom spot is mind-boggling to me. Like, why?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I was going to say to drive interest to today, perhaps, but I don't know how much.
I don't think anyone believed he was coming tonight. It was, I think, you know, after Sunday, I think those that were not aware of the filming schedule were after last night. But nonetheless, I mean, tonight's show, I'm sure we'll see an interesting number come out on Tuesday. Bobby Lashley against Rey and Dominic. No, I skipped over something. I skipped over a lot here.
The 24/7 title.
Yes. Reggie and Cedric for the 24/7 title. Cedric won. The 24/7 guys ran down. Dana Brooke appeared. Blockbuster pinned Cedric, and none of the guys could touch Dana. So they are redoing the angle they did years ago with Maria Kanellis, where she's a woman and...
She was pregnant too, wasn't she?
That's right. She was pregnant, and they couldn't touch her. In this one, didn't want to touch Dana.
Has the 24/7 title been around that long that we're like redoing angles now?
Yes. It's been around like, God, over 2 years since that title was brought in.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It was when they had fans.
Yeah. More before that, even like it came around right after the split, I think.
Like I'm saying before the pandemic, when they had fans. So 2019. Yeah.
I know.
All right. So Dana's your champion. Rey and Dominic are in the locker room. Dad, I just want to get something off my chest. Last week you were in the Hurt Lock and I just stood there. I didn't know what to do. I'm sorry. Rey says, that's okay, son. Try not to beat yourself up. Rey says that Lashley is not the first monster he's faced. I've faced many monsters and I've always been ready to fight. I don't need you to fight my battles. But tonight, I fight by your side. It's like, okay, well, which is it, Dad? You don't need me to fight your battles, or you want me in your corner tonight for this handicap match? Because it's 2-on-1. You either do need me or you don't need me. And based on the results the last 2 weeks, two of us together is better than one because we're getting demolished by this dude.
Yeah, it wasn't going to make much difference, I guess.
Dana was interviewed. She created an opportunity. She overcomes obstacles 24/7 and now has a target on her back. But I have created a moment.
Oh, yeah. Huge. The moment where you won the championship. I mean, it was her first championship, so maybe that was the moment for her.
Wow.
But, you know, it's a moment that it's a title that's shared by
Byron
many luminaries.
Saxton, Corey Graves.
Yeah. The commentator on Fox Sports.
Yeah.
What's his name? Rosenberg. Has won it, so...
Do they keep track of the lineage of this title? Like, is that...
Wikipedia does, I'm sure.
Is it? Okay. God bless the guy who...
Any predictions that. About how many champions there have been so far?
Oh, Jesus. Do you have it in front of you? I would seriously guess... I would guess like 400 title changes.
Are we up to 400? Okay. I'm scrolling. And not quite. 150. Dana Brooke is 154th.
That's it?
Holder.
I feel like there's been Raws where we've gotten like 15.
But then there are like these brackets, like asterisks. So she's
I would get a headache.
Technically the 154th, but in brackets the 157th.
Oh, there's a controversy.
Oh, because the okay. So here are the subject of the controversies. Okay, WrestleMania from this past year, Akira Tozawa won the championship, but this took place in the backstage area of Tropicana Field. This title change was shown on WWE's YouTube channel. The actual date the title change took place is unknown. WWE's official title history does not reflect this title change. And he also lost it to Joseph Average, who's the Old Spice guy.
Okay.
Played by Rick Boogs, and then R-Truth. So there are three unofficial Old Spice title reigns that may or may not be a part of it.
Yes, the prestigious 24/7 championship as documented.
Yeah, I think like, yeah, I don't know.
Let's not give it too much thought. Lashley against Rey and Dominic. MVP got on the microphone and said Rey is an icon, despite his diminutive size. But as a father, you leave so much to be desired. I'm disappointed in you. He says, monsters are real. You've defeated many, but none like Lashley. And asks, what are you going to do when Dominic is in the Hurt Lock and you have to explain to your wife, Angie, that he got injured because of your ego? And when she is so upset with you, why don't you give her my number?
Ooh, nice. Nice. Good promo from MVP. You know, talking about the man's wife, really cutting deep on the family things. Honestly.
Perfect promo for two baby faces to come back and gain a measure of revenge for moments later to combat this despicable manager.
Yeah, you weren't going to see that today. Maybe
I thought this
week
was almost like too much. It's like you're killing these guys. We have to have them humiliated on top of it.
I mean, that's assuming they care about the value of, you know, like we see on this show that there are guys that they actually want to protect and guys that they don't give a shit about. And unfortunately, Rey Mysterio and Dominic are people on the side of they don't give a shit about them and have been on that side for a long, long time. I mean, they're just, you know, a name here to like a Finn Balor to make the other guys look good.
So the only time the Mysterios would gain an advantage is when they were double-teaming Lashley. This included Dominic stopping a Hurt Lock to Rey and then was caught with a Pescado. And Rey was saving Dominic from being run into the post. After the break, MVP slaps Dominic from the floor. Lashley then runs Dominic into the post and avoids a sunset flip when Rey hits him with a senton. They hit a double 619, frog splash by Dominic, frog splash by Rey. Lashley still kicks out from a double cover, spears Rey, and then puts Dominic in the Hurt Lock for the submission. just like Bobby Lashley running through these dudes like you would expect. I don't know what Lashley's being built up for, but he's just Lashley destroying people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think that, you know, I don't think it's ever a bad thing that they're pushing one of their top backs strong. Unfortunately,
I just want them to find this conviction with a baby face. For the love of God, can we create a baby face?
True. Yeah,
we're fine with like our heel side is okay on both shows, but we need some baby faces.
Well, so I was trying to think who Lashley would be facing, and the only name I could come up with might be Damian Priest, might be Edge. Actually, isn't Edge on Raw now?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, maybe it's Edge. You know, maybe Edge will come back. But they're building him very strong.
Kevin Patrick is with Big E. He let a lot of people down last night. I can't blame anyone but myself. But it's time to move on. And he does. He moves on. He's got to worry about Rollins and Owens. And says Austin Theory is young and brash, but he's also talented. But I'm going to leave the Barclays Center feeling pretty, pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Continuing the Larry David thread. You know, I was curious how they would handle Big E coming back off of the loss, and their tactic is seemingly just kind of ignoring it and having the character
shrug
move
your
on.
Shoulders. I lost. Moving on.
Yeah. It tends to be the case with the New Day and significant losses. Unfortunately, it's the power of positivity, I guess. After
that's all, that's it. That's it. Kofi gave him advice. It's like you have these. Hey, man, you got 22 minutes. I got a couple seconds. Kevin Patrick was with Liv Morgan, and Kevin Patrick says, "You must be over the moon after Team Raw won last night." And everyone is thinking, why would she be over the moon? And Becky walks in and says what was on everyone's mind, saying, like, you lost last night. And once again, Liv under-delivered. She reminds everyone how she failed at Money in the Bank, and Liv is pretty sure, "I held that title last night." Becky just laughs and says, "Yeah, at autograph sessions, I let little kids hold this title every weekend," and says that Liv embarrassed everyone and starts mocking her and asking if she's going to cry until Liv snaps. This is a trend now for our baby faces. She snaps and nails Becky.
Yeah. You know, it was like a schoolyard bully segment where, you know, I think Becky did her best to try to make the little kid cry. And I think Liv Morgan's punch was supposed to be a lot more impactful than it came across. I didn't really sense it, didn't really feel that way for me. And I don't know how good her acting is to be able to pull off like this. And I think it's a shitty character to begin with. Like, I feel like there's a real great story within her, a real great promo within her, if she can dig into like some of her real life aspects. But instead she's kind of being reduced to like, you know, 6-year-old being teased on the playground. And it's unfortunately maybe not doing it for me so much.
Damian Priest comes out for his open challenge. He is confronted by Commander Aziz and Apollo Crews. And we got to hear Commander Aziz speak and then Crews speak. This was riveting stuff. Apollo said, "Mr. Priest, or should I say Damian, it seems you have a split personality of late."
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. So they're getting Aziz to speak now. He's doing the introductions for Apollo Crews. I think this gimmick is death for him. I mean, it's his Deacon Batista. Like, it's done nothing for him. You know, he debuted very much at the same time as Omos. And maybe there's a difference in skill level, but certainly in terms of gimmick, you know, they have not given Aziz a whole lot to do.
No. It feels he was a idea once upon a time that has just kind of faded into the background. So Damian responds, or was it Mr. Priest? We're not sure. And says that, "Do you remember that we're in New York?" And this crowd cheers. This is after they booed him last night. So Damian Priest is, in fact, a babyface. So we've established that character trait. And says, "If you want to talk, why don't you two start a podcast? Or we can just fight." And Apollo Crews says, "No."
Can you imagine like Apollo Crews doing a whole podcast in his voice?
They could try. Sure.
I'd love to hear them review Raw.
Me too. I would love to hear them review Raw. So instead, Sami Zayn comes out. He wants the title shot, so he gets it. And so there's quite the... on the show where these people are destroying this whole arena to find an egg for a WWE title shot, you have another guy willingly walk away from your secondary title.
Oh, yeah. Like, nobody wants that thing. Like, you kidding me?
Why is there such a disparity between the two?
Oh, God. Have you seen the booking? You want to be on the pre-show? John, come on. Nobody wants these things. You get stuck at the border.
They had a very quick match here. I was out of Raw by this point. Wait, this to me was just a show that was like never ending. Zayn grabs the belt on the floor, pie faces Priest, and this causes Priest to snap. And it seems like his directive is to make it as animated. Like, take what you did last time and multiply it by 10 each time. And that's where we're at. Like, I think they want him to like turn red.
Yeah. I wonder, like, I really do wonder where they got the idea from. Maybe it was from them. I do think it's like maybe just from the name. Okay. Oh, you're Damien and you're a priest. You're bad and you're good. So this is the Damien. I do think the crowd is reacting well for it, though. They recognize this as like a big Hulk up spot.
That's the goal, is to make it a Hulk up spot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's working well. But man, a feud with Apollo Crews, like Crews has been so cold since coming to Raw. So I don't know. But it's just another win for Priest on his way to a bigger feud, I guess.
So after the Priest makes his big comeback, chokeslam reckoning, pins Sami Zayn. Austin Theory is interviewed. He shows off his selfie with Vince McMahon. He's going to become the youngest champion and compares what he did for Team Raw to what Big E did at the Survivor Series. I was like, you both lost. You both had like equal failure, but you happened to be on the team where the guy did survive.
Pretty much, yeah.
So do you think 24 hours ago they knew Austin Theory would be the one to be the center of this egg discovery?
Your guess is as good as mine, but I would probably bet no.
I would think if we had 24 hours of foresight that he should have just survived with Rollins.
Well, I mean, to be fair to them, I don't think this is meant to be like a viable contender type of thing. Like this was supposed to be like somebody backdooring their way into an undeserved title opportunity.
This is the whole focus of the show.
But it's not like, you know, Austin Theory is getting the title shot because he's a competent wrestler. I mean, he had an 8-minute match because he was a competent wrestler, but it's not like he earned the shot.
So wouldn't this be more intriguing if he had just had a big win the night before? Like there was an inch of momentum.
But they wanted to give that to Rollins, who's a real contender.
He's got his title match. He doesn't need this.
But they wanted to put they wanted to fire him up, like same reason why Lashley got the win.
Well, we go to the main event.
It doesn't matter a whole lot. Like it could have been.
Should matter. That's the thing. It should matter. Like there should be. There's a reason that people get over, and there's a reason that others don't.
I mean, yeah, sure, you're right. I guess like in my mind, they look at Austin Theory as like, you know, just kind of a, like they did book him strong. You know, he was one of the final two, but they wanted the Soul Survivor thing, and they thought it was more important to give that to Rollins.
Rollins is out, and he's sitting ringside. This is where the crowd's humming. And then with Theory down, Kevin Owens comes out, and Theory is able to take advantage. Big E comes back, belly to bellies, and the splash. And then there's a spear on the apron attempt by Big E, but he's nailed with a knee, hits the Uranagi out of the corner, and then Big E is on the floor when Rollins chop blocks his knee, and this leads to a rolling blockbuster by Theory. Owens then throws Rollins into the ring, distracting the ref, and then Owens and Rollins start arguing on the floor, and they argue at such a volume that Austin Theory turns his back on Big E and is distracted by these two arguing on the floor for the longest time. He turns around and gets hit with the big ending and is pinned and looked like a total idiot, which I guess is the character.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, but that's a lot of their characters, seemingly, because this just feels like it's a pretty default finish for a WWE match. Terribly lame, uncreative distraction finish. But yeah, you know, as a test for Theory in a main event, I thought he looked good. You know, not amazing, but like maybe, you know, maybe like a John Cena level, like maybe above John Cena level in terms of athleticism. He has the size, he's good looking, and clearly Vince likes him enough to put him in a position like this. He's the guy who got the egg. So I see, you know, like if he continues, like I see Vince like wanting to use him a whole lot more, because I feel like this was probably a satisfying performance from him.
And then at the end of it, we had Rollins get attacked by Big E. Owens took off, and it ended with a big ending to Rollins. And then like a long period, like they had 2 minutes to fill of Big E and Owens yelling at each other, with Big E in the ring and Owens on the ramp. And we just got multiple replays of the ending until we got to the end of the hour and the end of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So they are setting up a three-way, it looks like, for their next big show, which will likely be day one. I think it's really bullshit how the guy who ended up winning your Survivor Series match gets the same result coming out as the guy who left at the beginning of the match. You know? Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah.
Like, Owens and Rollins are both going to end up with title shots, and I mean, I guess Owens is a genius, you know?
I guess it was mentioned. It just didn't seem like it was a big part of the story of Owens walking out on the team beyond Sarah Schreiber asking him about it and Owens kind of ignoring it. But yeah, that was it. I just think like it's really hard to get over just like the booking. Like you really have to just turn off so much to get into any of this. And I didn't think anything on this show, like if you're just watching and saying, hey, I don't care about the angles. They don't hinder my enjoyment of this. I like the wrestling to me left a lot to be desired on this show. I didn't think there was anything really spectacular on the show. And you had a show built around an egg that led to a title match. And that was it.
Yeah, I was, you know, like maybe this show is at its most lucrative point in history, like between all the great, amazing deals that they're creating with like movie properties and credit cards and DraftKings and all this other bullshit. They're probably making more money now than they ever have. But it all also feels like they are at their peak of creative bankruptcy lately, because it feels like they're putting zero effort into like, it's one thing to like, you know, have a fulfillment of like, oh, we got to mention this movie, but it's another thing to like put absolutely the bare minimum of effort into try to integrate some of these properties onto your show. And that's what we got here with a very poor attempt at a payoff for this two night long whodunit. You know, Survivor Series itself is a concept that is strictly there to just sell a pay-per-view on name and concept with very little thought on how to follow up with the characters afterwards. Clearly, those matches had zero stakes for any of the performers tonight. Big E, I was disappointed at the pretty non-existent attempt to try to get him to sell the loss, nor really like grow from the loss. He just straight up ignored it and moved on. Becky is completely ignoring the nights of the prior night's events and just going back to being a heel, even though she's probably, you know, more liked than her next opponent in Liv Morgan. And then we got what, Bianca and Doudrop, and then two title switches for titles that nobody gives a shit about in the tag team titles and the 24/7. So,
and a fire extinguisher.
So if you haven't been watching WWE TV lately, you're good. You don't need to come back. You probably have no reason to come back until the Rumble, because this is not a good show right now.
Let's go to the feedback and hear what everyone had to say. We start off with Dan. I tuned into Raw for the egg story. I was disappointed by the egg story. apologies to newly crowned 24/7 title holder Dana Brooke, but I wasn't wild about the non-egg stories either. Even Becky's in-ring promo felt off by her standards. Happy to see Seth is okay, and I can't imagine I'm the only person who guessed a bunch of leftover Pizza Hut was the surprise in the Street Profits bag. Nope, they fooled you. They gotcha.
Maybe they have a deal with a fire extinguisher company
today. Oh, yes. Yes.
That's a cool promotion. All right, Kate from Montreal says, for a brief moment, one guy managed to unite all wrestling fans tonight. We all agree that attacking performers makes you a complete arsehole. I was genuinely worried that the eggs hunt story was going to culminate in someone getting fired, which would have been incredibly tone deaf, even for a company that spent 4 hours last night teasing an appearance by someone they knew wasn't coming. Sorry, I'm still not over how weird that was. So by that measure, I guess that result was better than I expected. Do you think there is a longish term plan for Austin Theory?
Long term.
It's yeah, only been
I feel like he'll be on Raw next week. That's the long term plan.
I don't think there's a, I mean, I do think like eventually, not this year, but like maybe the year after, I do think he would be a perfect character poised for somebody that they would pick for a Money in the Bank. But I think we're a bit of a ways away from it. But today, I think, was a big test. You know, they gave him a big role. He had the main event against Big E in a championship match. And I thought he did pretty well, you know, at least according to their eyes. Like if they think Bron Breakker is at this level, I mean, I think Austin Theory is a very similar mold. I think Austin Theory is better, quite frankly, you know, like good in ring, This is a good character for him. So I definitely think like they have plans for him, but I don't know how immediate they would be.
Carl from Calgary with the golden egg heist. I wondered if we were going to get Rikishi coming forward saying, "I did it for The Rock." Very anticlimactic end to the search. I guess a way to give Theory a look in a big profile match. I do like Big E having multiple threats with Rollins and Owens. October 4th was the last time the Raw women's tag titles were defended, which shows how little importance they carry. Our British monarch and Miss America, the new champions. Okay, in reference to your new team. I feel like Dominic is getting worse, not better. Developmental would be the best place for him. I get Ray wanting to share the ring with his son, though.
Is he actually getting worse in ring? I feel like he's been pretty constant. Like
I'm not watching a guy that I think if we were to sit down and watch a year ago, you would see like gigantic improvements.
But the stories have been non-existent. Like he hasn't had an actual program in a long, long time.
No, I'm talking strictly like bell to bell as just
has he even had a chance to like actually have like the types of matches he was allowed to have a year and a half ago?
Well, that's to the point. Is he improving? Like, is he like you're not wrestling as often? You're not doing those kinds of matches, and this is someone in still like the development years of his career. So, I mean, we said that from the get-go. Like, here is a guy that you can see, like, there's a lot of potential in this guy. But this is a company that, absent house shows, is not, like, a great place to be learning and improving when you're not, when you are so young.
Right.
Says that Sami Zayn remains one of my favorite competitors. The only part of the egg hunt that I liked. 4 out of 10 show from Carl.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for continuing to vote out of 10 for these shows, even though we took away the poll. So, good. Cool. 4 out of 10.
So, there you go. The mystery was solved tonight. The egg has been returned. Now the question, will Vince McMahon be returned on Raw?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, I suppose.
We'll probably, that answer will probably be made on Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, I think so too. But how many times can they go to Vince? Didn't they try this for a time and it just kind of like stopped working?
Traditionally, it's like you get like a little bit of a spike and then it's diminishing returns. And I would imagine it would be no different this time. I do think this tonight will do well. But if you go to this, you know, if he's on the next 2 or 3 weeks, I don't think you're going to see that same bump. It's a total temporary fix going to Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's going to wrap things up. Again, we're back Tuesday evening. With talk, and it will sound seamless because we will be in person. So I look forward to that way, and we will speak then. Thanks to all of you for joining us live. We are live after every Raw, every Dynamite, every SmackDown. So we will speak with you later this week.